In his darker moments, Rincewind had come up with his own explanation as to why even minor spells refused to stay in his head for more than a few seconds. They were scared, he decided. He repeated.
A small one would do, said Drueli,
watching him curl his lips in a frenzy of anger and embarrassment. She signalled, and a couple of he-dryads closed in. The spell chose that moment to vault into the temporarily abandoned saddle of Rincewind's consciousness. He felt it sitting there, leering defiantly at him.
I do know a spell, he said wearily.
Yes? Pray tell, said Drueli.
Rincewind wasn't sure that he dared, although the spell was trying to take control of his tongue. He fought it.
You said you could read my mind, he said indistinctly. Read it.
She stepped forward, looking mockingly into his eyes. Her smile froze. Her hands raised protectively, she crouched back. From her throat came a sound of pure terror. Rincewind looked around. The rest of the dryads were also backing away. What had he done? Something terrible, apparently. But in his experience, it was only a matter of time before the normal balance of the universe restored itself and started doing the usual terrible things to him. He backed away, ducked between the still-spinning dryads who were creating the magic circle, and watched to see what Drueli would do next.
"Grab him!" she screamed. "Take him a long way from the tree and kill him!"
Rincewind turned and bolted, across the focus of the circle. There was a brilliant flash. There was a sudden darkness. There was a vaguely Rincewind-shaped violet shadow dwindling to a point and winking out. There was nothing at all. Hrun, the barbarian, crept soundlessly along the corridors, which were lit with a light so violet that it was almost black. His earlier confusion was gone. This was obviously a magical temple, and that explained everything. It explained why, earlier in the afternoon, he had espied a chest by the side of the track while riding through this benighted forest. Its top was invitingly open, displaying much gold. But when he had leapt off his horse to approach it, the chest had sprouted legs and gone trotting off into the forest, stopping again a few hundred yards away. Now, after several hours of teasing pursuit, he had lost it in these hell-lit tunnels. On the whole, the unpleasant carvings and occasional disjointed skeletons he passed held no fears for Hrun. This was partly because he was not exceptionally bright, while being at the same time exceptionally unimaginative, but it was also because odd carvings and perilous tunnels were all in a day's work. He spent a great deal of time in similar situations, seeking gold or demons or distressed virgins, and relieving them respectively of their owners, their lives, and at least one cause of their distress. Observe Hrun as he leaps cat-footed across a suspicious tunnel mouth. Even in this violet light his skin gleams coppery. There is much gold about his person, in the form of anklets and wristlets, but otherwise he is naked, except for a leopard-skin loincloth. He took that in the steaming forests of Hawondoland, after killing its owner with his teeth. In his right hand, he carried the magical black sword Kring, which was forged from a thunderbolt and has a soul but suffers no scabbard. Hrun had stolen it only 3 days before from the impregnable palace of the Archmandrite of B'ituni, and he was already regretting it. It was beginning to get on his nerves.
"I tell you, it went down that last passage on the right,"
hissed Kring, in a voice like the scrape of a blade over stone.
"Be silent."
"All I said was..."
"Shut up."
And Two Flower, he was lost. He knew that. Either the building was much bigger than it looked, or he was now on some wide underground level without having gone down any steps, or, as he was beginning to suspect, the inner dimensions of the place disobeyed a fairly basic rule of architecture, by being bigger than the outside. And why all these strange lights? They were eight-sided crystals set at regular intervals in the walls and ceiling, and they shed a rather unpleasant glow that didn't so much illuminate as outline the darkness. And whoever had done those carvings on the wall, Two Flower thought charitably, had probably been drinking too much, for years. On the other hand, it was certainly a fascinating building. Its builders had been obsessed with the number 8. The floor was a continuous mosaic of eight-sided tiles. The corridor walls and ceilings were angled to give the corridors 8 sides, if the walls and ceilings were counted, and in those places where part of the masonry had fallen in, Two Flower noticed that even the stones themselves had 8 sides.
"I don't like it,"
said the picture imp from his box around Two Flower's neck.
"Why not?" inquired Two Flower.